time once again for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in 2018 is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the fire hose of news frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute, which is okay. There's always plenty to talk about. And we do define media very broadly. We're talking about items in the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here from the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University, Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay. Good to have you both back here on The Exchange.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's the obvious place to start is with the media firestorm that started with a book and spread to pretty much every other kind of media there is in the world, and that is the book about the White House, Fire and Fury, by Michael Wolff. Any book about the White House is going to cause a stir. This one seems to have a very long shelf life in many media.
Everybody's talking about it for sure.
Yeah, I think that recently they talk a lot about how it's actually given Trump a bit freedom to distance himself from Steve Bannon, and how that's become part of a big part of the conversation, as well as all the different little and big gossip that surround itself in the book. But even after the split between Trump and Bannon.
And Bannon's out at Breitbart, which is pretty
which is another development just this week. Yes, the book was actually released, it ended up getting released early on the 5th of January.
Well, right.
I can't believe it hasn't even been a week yet.
Well, that's the thing that was fascinating to me about it, is that, of course, the best way to deal with something that is a message that you don't want people to hear is not saying, I'm going to sue you, this book is garbage, right, on the loudest loudspeaker you can possibly use on Twitter, which just guaranteed that this is a bestseller. So, of course, it did just come out on the number one spot. The publisher moved up the release of the book, and has said that, bring it on. If they want to sue us, they can, which, it's probably doubtful that they actually would because of discovery and everything involved there.
When you mentioned the loudest loudspeaker of Twitter, which I want to come back to in a second, but I was just reading yesterday that the initial print run was 150,000 books. They've gone up to 1 million for the first printing now.
Yeah, I mean, bookstores across the country had midnight releases where they were sold out in minutes. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Let's come back to that point, though. Is Twitter, in fact, the loudest loudspeaker now? If you want to get attention in the world, is Twitter the fastest way to get it?
Well, if you're Trump. I don't know. I don't know if that's true for me or for most average Twitter users. But certainly for Trump, that's the thing people are watching.
So let's move on to the Golden Globes, which were held Sunday night. And these are sort of the pre-Oscars, the first awards of the season to sort of get the beginning of the awards going. And it's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And apparently there's still quite a bit of mystery about who actually belongs to them and who votes on this. But there was expected to be a lot of attention on the Golden Globes because it's the first event involving a large gathering in Hollywood since all of the sexual harassment and misconduct reports have come out. And so all of the women came dressed in black, but then one person rose above it all, which was Oprah Winfrey with her acceptance speech of a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely so exciting to listen to her speech, and you could see everyone kind of with hopeful eyes hearing the different ways that she talked about Me Too and men and people within the entertainment industry. Also really important that she talked about the media too. I thought that she talked about journalists in a very positive and eloquent way. For me, when I listened to her, it was really powerful because my grandmother, when I was reaching puberty, like 10 or 11, she talked to me from a very honest point of view about men, and that if something happens to you, like sexual harassment or assault, that people might not believe you. And it's so sad to hear that when you're a young girl. And I don't really blame my grandmother for saying that, because that came from her heart and her generation and everything. So it was really refreshing to hear Oprah just announce in front of such a huge audience that the time is up for this type of sexual harassment happening, not just in entertainment, but outside of entertainment too. So it's great for young women and people just to hear that if they haven't heard that in their own household.
So a major event on that level of dealing with all of the sexual misconduct and harassment. But then there's the other aspect of it, which is that when you're Oprah Winfrey and you give a speech like that, people begin talking about Oprah 2020. And that seemed like it was going on before the speech was even done, Andrew.
Yeah, the reaction was kind of amazing. I mean, Bill Kristol, if anyone knows, is, you know, one of the editors of Weekly Standard, a very conservative writer. He tweeted, "I'm with her" about Oprah Winfrey. I mean, people had Oprah fever after this speech. And I think for a lot of reasons. One, it was a very inclusive speech. It was not a partisan speech, but it was very inclusive about race and gender and anyone who and as Precious mentioned, the media, about anyone who's felt a loss of hope in the past year. And I think, you know, everyone has kind of felt that 2017 was not a fun year, certainly in terms of the news. And so I think people got really excited about someone who is obviously a very intelligent person, very articulate person, someone who literally climbed her way up from, you know, being the daughter of a teenage home worker to being a billionaire. So people seeing like a lot of things that were sort of the myth of what Donald Trump was is actually true in Oprah. On the other hand, it's kind of funny because, you know, we don't know a lot about Oprah's political positions. I mean, she's obviously at least center left. You know, we know that she's done a lot of, generous giving and cares a lot about a lot of important issues. But we really don't know her politics overall. You know, we don't know what stands she would take on issues. We don't know if she actually is ever going to run. You know, so it's kind of interesting how excited people got. I think people are just so desperate for a hopeful message, for someone who seems that they actually have something to say and has a position on something. And I think that's a lot of what was going on.
Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University, our guests every month for this segment we call Signals and Noise, a discussion of topics in the media. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's stick on the Hollywood stuff because you had brought my attention to the fact that Michelle Williams, who was in the movie All the Money in the World, which was with Kevin Spacey, and when Kevin Spacey was fired for his perceived sexual misconduct or admitted, did he actually admit it? He said, "If it happened, I'm sorry." I think is what
he took a little swirly position.
Okay,
that.
Anyway, he was fired. Christopher Plummer was hired. They shot the movie in just about no time at all. Reshot the stuff that Kevin Spacey had been in and got it on screen before the year was out. Mm-hmm. But then you were telling me that Michelle Williams got paid a whole lot less than Mark Wahlberg got for the same session.
Yeah, so this was interesting because this news broke right after the Golden Globes and right after this moment that was really sort of reclaiming women, which, you know, that the Golden Globes was also timed with this new initiative called Time's Up, which is a website that you can go to. And I think it's timesup.org or timesup.com. I'm not sure what the URL. I should have that prepared.
Out.
But, you know, which is a whole initiative about women in the workplace, equality, fighting sexual abuse. And it's actually not just about Hollywood. It's about, you know, every industry, but it's really being spearheaded by these celebrities. And so this came out right after that, right? That Mark Wahlberg got $1.5 million for the reshoots and Michelle Williams got $1,000. And some people were saying that they thought that was a typo when the article came out. But no, it was $1,000. And they share the same agency. And so typically, you know, agencies work together to get the best for their clients. And you know, you can't necessarily fault one agent for saying, well, I'm going to get the best possible deal for Mark Wahlberg. But clearly Michelle Williams' agent was not doing that. Basically let her, you know, Michelle Williams had said, I believe so much in this that you know, that you're replacing Kevin Spacey in this way, that I think this is important. I'm willing to do it for scale. And so that's what she ended up doing. But it was obviously a very unfair working situation.
Wow. So that gets into a couple different realms. I mean, first of all, there's the whole, like, you know, the highest bidder, you know, who's going to call the price, who's doing. But then it gets into, you know, once again, it gets into Hollywood and treatment of women.
Yeah, I think it even goes beyond just Hollywood. Women always have to have some kind of awareness, I feel, and seeing what's going on with their colleagues. And it's not her fault. I mean, I've definitely been in that same position, too, where, like, yeah, I just want to be part of this project and I believe in it. not so much for just Hollywood, but just for the awareness of people in the working world. There's a website called Glassdoor.com that I like to use.
Glassdoor?
Yeah, especially when it comes to academia, but other areas and fields too, where you can see people who have posted their salaries and different types of comments. That way you just have this type of awareness of,
are you getting paid what you're supposed to?
Yeah, are you getting paid what you're supposed to? And last night I saw that Diane Kruger actress, she posted on her Instagram social media about Michelle Williams, and she seemed pretty upset and furious about this. So hopefully it kind of spreads too and on social media, that support for Michelle Williams and other women getting equal pay.
I just can't believe $1,000 would even be union scale.
I know.
It's amazing how little money that is for somebody doing what she's doing. Mm. Let's move on in Signals and Noise and talk about the pipeline itself. We were hearing over the last couple of days that Democrats in the Senate are on the verge of being able to force a congressional vote on net neutrality, which at this point has just been handled administratively through the FCC.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know all the ins and outs of the procedures involved. I know that they have enough to force a vote. And that Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, has announced that she will support net neutrality. So assuming that every Democrat supports net neutrality, which not every Democrat has actually publicly said yet, but assuming that, then they are one vote away. They would need to flip one more Republican in order for the Senate to pass legislation enshrining net neutrality. Now, of course, that just goes to the House and whether the House would ever do anything with that, and then whether or not Trump would sign it. I mean, there's lots of hurdles and there's lots of reasons to believe that this won't actually happen. But it would at least be perhaps a nice signal in favor of net neutrality if the Senate were able to pull that off.
So here again, this is the chances of it getting out of the House is one of the major issues here.
Right.
And then still, they need one more Republican just to get it to clear the Senate.
But I think the Democrats obviously want this to be a campaign issue, too. And I think it could be. One of the things that was interesting, speaking of kind of media events with the president, yesterday, the president, I think it was yesterday, had an open meeting about immigration. And there's a moment where Senator Dianne Feinstein
said it was two days ago,
said that, why don't we have a clean DACA bill? And Trump said, yeah, I want that. And then the Republican sitting two seats down from him said, well, no, actually, I think what we want is this. And he said, oh, yeah, that's what I want. Ugh. And so I think there's a real possibility here that if Democrats make this campaign issue and they take back the House, if they pass a net neutrality bill, Trump will just sign it.
Yeah, that was an interesting session, and that has also been remarked upon in the media by a couple of commentators. I was reading both E.J. Dionne and Dana Milbank from the Washington Post yesterday, who remarked upon the meeting that it was really interesting to watch. And we're veering a little off the media pathway here, I know, but there were cameras in the room for 55 minutes, and it seemed like whoever spoke last, the president echoed that person's opinion.
And that really takes us full circle, too, because that meeting happened a lot because of Fire and Fury, because of the claims of saying that Trump has no position, doesn't know the issues, can't remember people's names. And so they were they broadcast that meeting to sort of combat some of the perception.
Right. Okay. So let's take a call here. We have Jamie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Signals and Noise with Andrew and Precious.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, panel.
Hi.
Good morning.
I have this is purely tongue in cheek, I assure you, but I have the next new party. It's going to be called the Fantasy Party, mm-hmm. and the team will be Oprah Winfrey and Mr. Rogers of the neighborhood. Because Oprah is the articulate one, and I know that Mr. Rogers is no longer with us, but this is a fantasy party after all. Mm-hmm. And at least he would know how to talk to Washington, D.C. in terms that they could understand. That's my only comment, and I'll just take the rest of it off the air.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. That's an interesting thing that he brings up, though, because you have to be aware when you work in the media, as I do, that there are ways to talk to people to get things to soak in. They have to be fast and conversational in broadcasting for things to be understood. But mm-hmm. then when you start talking about the concepts in Washington, D.C., some of these are very complicated things.
They are.
And so it's just an interesting world to try to make sure that the media contains messages that everybody can, A, understand, and B, understand well enough to take a comprehensive action on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, sorry, that ended a bit of a soapbox there. So while we're back to news, then Donald Trump was promising fake news awards. Actually, he was going to announce on Monday of this week, and that didn't happen.
And he got pushed.
And
back.
There are apparently some issues with this.
Yeah, I was telling Andrew earlier that I almost feel like it's in like elementary school when someone announces something and you just should not give them attention about that. I almost feel like, oh, should we even give him attention about his fake news award? But also it could be beneficial for that winner, which he also called loser, because maybe they're doing a really great job in journalism and he's going to
Is this a predictor of the Pulitzers?
That's what legitimate journalists.
Well, and it was interesting, too, to notice that Stephen Colbert, who has really risen in the ratings by basically whomping on the White House every night, put up a billboard. His show put up a billboard in Times Square, like the advertisements that people put out for the Oscars, submitted for your consideration.
I think the Daily Show actually took out a full page ad in one of the newspapers too. Yeah, several of them are doing that.
So one of the things if Donald Trump does actually go through on these fake news awards, apparently there are some issues with White House staff who help him. They could be breaking the law.
Right. Yeah. So my understanding of it, and again, is a little in the weeds of the law for me, but is that the president is exempt from this particular legislation, but that that White House staff are not allowed to favor or disfavor a particular piece of media or media outlet. And so if Trump does this all on his own, he's in the clear. But if any White House staff help him distribute this, help him prepare it, are involved in its production or distribution, that could actually go against federal statutes.
I think he usually work on the general alternate universe of, well, this is actually coming from the campaign.
Yes, and that was actually campaign. That's what they've said. And Scavino, is that the name of the social media director, has said, I have nothing to do with this. This is coming from the campaign. And so, that's where they're living right now. So we'll see if he even does it. I mean, at this point, he said it's delayed until next Wednesday. Who knows?
Which was January 17th, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
If anything, it'll probably just be on Twitter, I'm guessing. We'll see.
I'm hoping for a Periscope.
Periscope.
I don't want to get accused of glossing over something because the president was talking again yesterday about libel laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's one thing to talk about fake news. You don't like what's coming out, but also to talk in terms of libel. Mm-hmm. That's one of the cornerstones of this country is you can say what you want up within a certain reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't. I mean, basically what he described yesterday was the libel laws as they're written now. If somebody knows something isn't true and puts it out there anyway, yeah, that meets the standard for libel.
It was like Jake Tapper on CNN said, I think we lose how extraordinary it is that the president of the United States has threatened to sue to keep a book from being published. I mean, that's not something that's happened. And so I think we really are living in extraordinary times where the White House is daily attacking free speech, free media, and is coming out against, the First Amendment rights that we hold dear, that people should be able to critique people in power, that people should be able to publish things that you don't like. And just because you don't like them doesn't mean that they're not true.
Before we get to your pick threes for the month and the things that you are interested in media right now, and again, media ranging from virtual reality to books, I do want to talk about Star Wars, the Last Jedi, because it's really interesting to watch the fact that this is the rare Star Wars movie that the critics seem to be more favorable about than the viewers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Precious hasn't seen it yet.
I haven't seen a movie in the theater since I've had my baby.
Yeah,
are lightsabers, stuffed animals.
I know.
Yeah, so no spoilers. I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan, but I fit no camp because I have all my friends are divided between it was the best Star Wars yet, or at least the best since Empire Strikes Back, versus friends who said it destroyed their childhood, which I think is absurd. For me, I really enjoyed the film. I liked a lot of it, and there are other parts where I kind of like, I don't really get that. I think the hardest part, and again, I don't want to go into spoilers, is just that the challenge of what has happened with Carrie Fisher's death. And I think that's going to be a real challenge for the third film, which will be interesting.
No doubt. In this particular film, though, you had to deal with this. I mean, Carrie Fisher's character is prominent in this film, as is Mark Hamill's character, mm-hmm. the original Luke Skywalker from the original movies, and a major part of this movie, in ways that were different enough, I understand, that he actually had some fairly big arguments with director and screenwriter.
Yeah, he has said, he's on the record of going to the director and saying, I disagree with everything you've done here. but it is my job to do my best to realize it for you. And so he kind of said, you know, if you want to change tact, I'm ready to do that, but I'm here to do a job. And he was very professional about it. And I actually, that was the thread that I didn't really have a bunch of a problem with. I thought that his performance was phenomenal. I think it was a lifetime performance for him. I think it was probably his best performance ever. Mark Hamill was amazing in it. And I thought it was a really interesting direction to go with the Luke character, even though he disagreed with it. I thought it was actually pretty powerful.
Okay, so a minute each now for pick threes for the current scene, the things that you've been consuming in the media of late. Precious?
I love reading all different type of publications, ranging from like my son's highlights to Vogue magazine. But I think that the recent editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue, Elaine Welteroth, black woman who is very, very in touch, I think, with the social topics that are related to people in high school and college, is doing a great job. Everything from like Black Lives Matter to different topics on trans, topics relating to love.
Well, being really relevant.
I feel that Teen Vogue is doing a much better job in being inclusive than the regular Vogue. So that's one. Also, I just love listening to James Franco on the Fresh Air, NPR Fresh Air interview, talk about the Disaster Artist. It made me really excited to see that film. And I just think he's very charming, even on radio and interviews. And also Top Chef season 17. It's really fun to watch and people be so creative.
That's a great list. Teen Vogue, The Disaster Artist, and Top Chef. Andrew.
Well, one is The Marvelous Ms. Maisel, which is on Amazon Prime, which just won the Golden Globe for Best Comedy Series and Best Actress in a Comedy Series. Really hilarious, from the creator of Gilmore Girls, about a housewife who becomes a comedian. And I might run out of time. I may just get picked two, because my second one is Star Wars related, which is Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, which is a new VR experience that's only in London, Orlando, and Anaheim. It just opened in Anaheim this week. I experienced it in Orlando over the break. It is, what they do is they have taken a whole room, a large room, and built out a set. And then you have a mobile VR pack, and you're in with a team, and you're running through this on a Star Wars mission. You're pretending to be a stormtrooper on a secret mission, and you can interact with your team. You can make hand signals to them. The sensors are amazing. It when the doors open, you're on a lava planet. It's hot air hits you. It's incredibly immersive. It's almost like being on a holodeck. It is amazing.
Wow. So the Star Wars Shadows of the Empire?
Yeah, Shadows of the Empire. So if you are in Anaheim, and it's only like $35, I think, go see that. It's amazing.